This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. It's good to be back for our weekly Friday discussion reviewing the past few days in North Carolina politics. Here, as usual, are Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Nice to see you both.
Welcome
Great
back,
to see you, Jeff.
All right, state lawmakers working on a budget. Process in a moment, Rob. First, the contents as we know them now, recording on a Friday morning. There are 6% average pay increases for teachers, would be an 8% average bump for state highway patrol troopers, a 4% bump for corrections officers, and a modest 2% raise for all 81,000 or so rank and file state employees. Rob, there are some other details trickling out as well. A good and a bad from this spending plan so far, noting there's much more to come.
I mean, obviously the overwhelming bad part of it is that it's trickling out. We don't know what the heck they're doing. There's been no process. There's been no, I know you wanted to hold off on the process discussion, but my God, there's been no committee meetings. There's been no discussion of this in public. It's just rumors. In terms of the substance of what we're hearing, well, sure, it's great that they're going to give some raises to folks. I mean, they're long overdue. We have too few employees in many, many state agencies. So the fact that there are, that say, prison guards are getting a small bump in their salary isn't going to help the fact that our prisons are understaffed, or our Department of Environment is understaffed, or our schools are understaffed. There are 15,000 teachers in the plan, from what we can tell, who won't get any raise at all. So, I mean, you know, it's better than nothing, but it's not even it's a pale shadow of what we really need in this state. It's just the very beginning.
What about this living wage bump? They're bringing up the minimum salary for state employees. It's about 24 and change right now. They're going to bring that up to 31,000.
That sounds like a very promising idea. It's good, but you know, there are also hundreds of thousands of people in the private sector who would like a raise too, so they ought to raise the minimum wage for everybody in the state to a living wage. It's great. It's good to set an example. State employees, that's a great start. That's the best thing I've heard so far out of this budget.
Becky?
Well, just a couple points. First of all, everybody across the state is getting a pay increase with the tax cuts that are going to take place. And we know that's going to take place because it was in the two-year budget that was passed last year. This is the fourth consecutive year that state employees are getting some kind of pay bump. You know, I think that's significant. We know from teachers this is the fifth consecutive year. So there's clearly a commitment for that. I think over $200 million in this budget has been dedicated to pay increases for state employees. You know, I think this is significant. I thought it was really significant. Even CNAC, the Robert Broom, the executive director for
State
CNAC, State Employees Association, attended the press conference and said, this is great. So I think it's very positive. You know, I think this is good news. As Rob mentioned, we're starting to see the budget roll out. I think we have been told we'll get it over the weekend. But so far, the things that we've learned, there's additional money for broadband. There's additional money for school safety initiatives. There's pay increases for teachers. We now know there's pay increases for state employees across the board, and addressing some of those shortages we had with the correctional officers, highway patrol, those kind of things. So I think this is very positive. I think it is a good day. Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina.
All right. As for this process, the state budget typically goes through, I would call it a robust process, series of committee meetings, several hours of proposed, some of which are adopted, amendments on the floors of each chamber. Republican leadership is breaking with decades of standing practice, and this budget will not be amended at all. When it emerges, whether that's this weekend or Monday night from closed-door negotiations, that will be the plan. Democrats say they've been cut out of the deliberations altogether. Some Republicans who I've talked to are not thrilled. Becky, you are a steward of transparency and thoughtful debate. Do you take issue with this?
I take tremendous issue with this. I think that this process they have chosen to follow is very flawed. I think that, you know, we need to remember that every single member of the General Assembly represents roughly the same number of North Carolinians. And every one of those citizens of North Carolina deserves for their voice to be heard. And that is through our representative government. You know, Republicans control the General Assembly. They have super majorities. You know, we can pretty much predict exactly how this was going to go, whether you have full debate and whether you drag this out for weeks or whether you do it in 3 days, as they've decided to do. I would argue that the result is probably going to be the same. But I think the opportunity to have that debate, to have that discussion, is very important to the process. And even if it is a done deal as it comes out, and we saw this with the Democrats too. I mean, you know, let's just be honest.
The party Democrats in charge.
No, we didn't see the conference report with the budget. Let me me make clear on that. But this notion of, you know, what you have to say really has little impact mm-hmm. on the final budget. You know, we saw this for you. That's the advantage of being in the majority. But having said that, I think that to preserve the integrity of the system, we need to have that full and open debate and disclosure.
You're absolutely right on that. But I mean, even when the Democrats were running the show in the latter part of the late decade, we would have these long into the night amendments offered on the floor. Republican amendments would get adopted left and right. There's all kinds of specific laws that are jammed into the budget. We fully expect there'll be all kinds of non-budget policy jammed into the budget, little specific new laws in a host of areas. And it's preposterous that we can't discuss those, that we can't offer amendments to them, we can't even maybe make them better. The notion, people need to understand this, there's going to be one document presented, it's going to be an up or down vote, no amendments, no meaningful examination of all the details in there. Even if you're for 95% of it, but you find 5% that's terrible, you know, you have no choice. You have no opportunity to amend it. So I don't, for the life of me, understand why they're doing this. I think it's terrible PR. They've got Becky and her group opposed to it. It just seems like it's this descent that's been going on at the General Assembly into darkness over the last several years with the decline of open process, and it's really reaching its nadir.
The adage around the building is the devil is in the details.
Always.
And that's the case with policy, generally speaking. We don't know any of the details or many of the details. We will get those in the coming days. I would just also note that when you push forward something this big, this fast, there are bound to be mistakes
in there.
Yeah,
just typos.
Right. Not, I mean, not well, necessarily nefarious, but they're doing this pretty quickly. And if you don't have the editors of the public and of watchdog groups like yourself, you're potentially walking toward another set of headaches.
Now, what we've been told, and I don't know, we'll see as this whole thing rolls out, you know, this budget was passed last year. The General Assembly passes a two-year mm-hmm. budget. What we've been told so far mm-hmm. is that the lion's share of this are things that they passed last year, that there are not that many changes. But again, the devil's in the detail, what those changes look like, you know, and we'll see. Right. Hopefully over the weekend. And I know we'll be going through it at the John Lott Foundation. We'll be doing an analysis early next week. I'm guessing Rob's group will be doing that too.
Sure,
so, you know, we'll have lots of eyes on this.
All right. Finally, a story out of NC Health News this week. It chronicled the story of Devin Davis, who was incarcerated in the state prison system. Davis was held in solitary confinement for 1,001 days and was not given his medication at one stretch for 113 days, almost 4 months. That stretch in the whole is in violation of the prison's own rules. Davis has been moved back to the general population of prisoners. He's scheduled to be released in a matter of days. Clearly a breakdown of protocols here. What is the necessary and appropriate action?
Well, I mean, the necessary and appropriate action is to recognize that this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the reality in our prisons and indeed in our mental health system, two systems that overlap tremendously in North Carolina, is that they're both horrifically underfunded, understaffed. These people that work in these systems are under incredible stress. They're dealing with incredibly difficult people. I mean, it's an example of how sustained underinvestment in essential public structures leads to catastrophe. And this is an example of that. And it, unfortunately, I don't think there's any doubt that there are hundreds of Devin Davises out there.
I agree. I think that there are. Devin Davis is just, sadly and tragically, this is not an isolated incident. Mm-hmm. We see it throughout the prison system. And, you know, I agree with Rob. You know, the mental health services across the country, not just in North Carolina, this is a national problem. And you have people going into the prison system and they're not receiving the medication that they need. And in many cases, what we've seen from research is, treated appropriately, these individuals are able to function on a pretty high level, whether they're in the prison system or if they're in the mental health system in general, in public. And so I think a real attention to this. Some of the things that have happened over the last several years, first of all, this is a problem that goes way back. Mm-hmm. You know, in the early 2000s, we had a different way that we approached mental health and that we were going to close the mental hospitals, you know, the asylums that we had. This was a national movement, certainly here in North Carolina, that we were going to close those big hospital systems and instead offer that care in the communities where people could live with their families, they could hold jobs, they mm-hmm. could be, you know, more integrated into the community. And it wasn't structured properly, it wasn't the right resources weren't put into place, and so this huge gap was created, and we've been trying to catch up and solve that since then. So this is not an immediate problem. This is just an illustration of how bad the problem has gotten and the needs that we have. You know, some of the things that we've seen at the General Assembly, we have these certificate of need regulations in North Carolina that really limit the expansion of mental health beds in hospitals and care facilities, eliminating those certificate of need laws and allowing more mental health beds to be built without the burdens of government is one way that we can look at it. Funding and attention to this and, you know, just making sure that people get their medication, that they're diagnosed properly is a big part of this.
But clearly, the problem in our state prisons is not a function of too much government regulation. It is a function of a sustained underinvestment in those prisons. And if we're not going to have the professionals in place to handle folks like this, to get them their medication, and if we're going to take hundreds of millions of new dollars in tax cuts this year, we're not going to get there next year either. So it's a terrible situation, and unfortunately it's going to continue in North Carolina until we move away from this underinvestment, disinvestment in public structures.
To read more about the state budget and issues within the state prison system, you can visit our website, wunc.org. Becky, Rob, thank you.
Thank you.